Azoy.
I'm sorry.
I'm a few different books.
The Inu Lishmas, I've forgotten the name, Reuven Asher Ben Yeshua. Sholem Herman is a Yortzad, and this year is dedicated, partly dedicated, and after this year, he's going to be making a Siyum, Masechtas Kiddushin, and we'll say a little bit about that afterwards. Some of us in the Beis Midrash are learning Chovos HaLevavos Shara Bechina, one of the early prokim in the Shara in the Chovos HaLevavos, and in the Derech of the Shara in the Chovos HaLevavos, everything's kaseid. He explains why each thing comes before everything, and it's right at the beginning. It's the second of the Sharim, which is one of the fundamental foundations that everything else afterwards is built on. Betochen and Yira and all the different gates and all the Avodas Elokim is built on this Yesod of Shara Bechina. What is Shara Bechina essentially, without going into too many details, is the seeing in the world the Chochmah Abayra. Looking at the world, looking at different aspects of the world, and seeing the Chochmah of the Abayra. Chovos HaLevavos divides them into seven different categories where the Chochmah of the Abayra is apparent. And I'd like to just focus on some of these areas, just ma'ira a little bit, maybe some sort of study in the Shara Bechina, and show where there's many opportunities to do this without changing your lifestyle too much. Both the Rambam and the Chinuch ask the question, how does one come to love Hashem? How do you come to love Hashem? Does it mean you've got to love God? How do you do that? It's like quite a tall order. So the Rambam in the Yad says, if a person will be Mizbainan, I don't have in front of me, in Yesod HaTorah, as Aloshin, if a person will be Mizbainan in the Bria, and you'll see the Maisim of Hashem, and you'll analyze them and understand them, and see what you can see on our level, what we understand of them, Miyad, says the Rambam, you'll come, and as a Morid Koloshin, you'll come to Yiralov, and Ava, you'll come to all these high dargas, Miyad. Miyad doesn't mean immediately, it takes time, Miyad means it's Mukhrach, Miyad means that it will happen. The Chinuch says that if you misboinen in Torah, a person will be misboinen in Torah, he will come to love Hashem, behechrach. Lamai says it's the same sugya, because Hashem was istakel b'raisa b'ra lamai. Hashem looks in the Torah and creates the world. That means you can see the world in the Torah, and you can see it in the world. It's pointed out to me, once saw, that if you look at the two brochas we say before we say Kriya Shema, what's Kriya Shema? Kriya Shema is v'aftes Hashem alakecho. That's where we accept upon ourselves to love Hashem unconditionally, even if he takes my life, he takes my mom, and whatever. I love Hashem conditionally. That's the avoid of Kriya Shema, to get to the point of Avos Hashem unconditional. The two brochas before that, what are the brochas? The brochas are hachana, preparation. Before you say Kriya Shema, before you get to the point where you're ready to give up your life for Hashem, it requires a little bit of preparation. So the angel said, Doyle prepared us with two brochas. The first brocha is Yotze Or. Is a meditation on the Bria. Look at the world, look at the stars, look at the sky. And the second bracha is Abba Rabba, which is Birkas HaTorah, which is the plea and the begging for Rachamim, La'ave, La'yira, through Limud HaTorah, Those are the two, the Chinuch and the Rambam in the Yad. The Rambam in Sefer Mitzvah says the same as the Chinuch, to Machlokes. These are the two drachim that a person can get. Two levels of, first of all, being Makiris Hashem, seeing Hashem, Yira. Yiras Hashem doesn't mean necessarily fear, it means that as well. But the root of Yira is to see. First of all, you have to see Hashem. Because he has to open his eyes and look around and see that there's something going on here. And it doesn't happen automatically. Person has to Yilmoid Yira. Yira doesn't happen automatically. Person has to put effort into it. Once also Simcha Wasserman Zatzal, why do I have to learn in Yeshiva? Avraham Avinu went outside, he looked at the stars, he looked at the sky, he looked at the world, and he worked out, there's Hashem, what's that? To sit in yeshiva and learn and whatever, who needs it? You've got a mashgiach on your head, and you've got to be on time, and you've got to learn, and it's hard, it's much easier, and I sit on a mountain, whatever, and meditate on the sunsets. You know, go to the beach, and you see Hashem, and it's wonderful. Well, I mean, it's easy to get the guys to come to a beach trip, much easier to get them to come to afternoon Seder, that I can assure you. I have a proof, MS Eid La'atzmoy, that it's easier to go to the beach than to sit in a Beis Midrash. So why do I have to do this? So he said to me, the problem is, if you don't learn Torah and you'll start being meditating on the Bria, you'll think you're descended from a monkey. The person has to know how to look at the world. It takes a little bit of training to look at the world. But there's an opportunity here. Let's try and look into some of the things in the Bria, and you'll see how you can fit them into your tefillah. When a person's saying, Yoitza Ma'ores, what are you thinking about? So the Bruch of Yoitza Ma'ores, what are we thinking about? So we think about how wonderful the sun is and how wonderful the moon is or whatever. But if you just do a little bit of research there, there's such science today has given us an opportunity, even if they'll be proved to be wrong later and what they're saying now is not true, but at least what they're saying now is unbelievable. 2,000 years ago, the astronomers thought there were 2,000 stars in the sky. That's it, worked out. 2,000 stars in the sky. They named it and worked out. Today, the astronomers will tell you that there's 100 billion stars in the galaxy, 150 billion stars in the galaxy, and this is just one of 150 billion galaxies, and that's only 1% of what we know. You wanna sit on those numbers for a little bit and just understand we're talking about unbelievable stories here. And these things don't stand still. Our galaxy is traveling at 250,000 miles an hour. 250,000 miles an hour. So if you're feeling a little bit, you know, you're a bit stressed out in the mornings, that could be why. Because when you're moving at 250,000 miles an hour, you kind of, you know, it affects you. And nothing bashes into anything. There's 150 billion stars flying around at 250,000 miles an hour and perfect harmony. In unbelievable harmony. I'm saying Yaitza Ma'ores, what am I thinking about? Here's something to think about. They discovered a few years ago a creature called a neutron star. You heard about a neutron star? Anybody here knows about neutron? Shmuel, you know about neutron stars?
A little bit.
Oh, I told you, I know who to ask. Why don't I ask you about neutron stars? Not a clue. Shmuel, you all know about neutron stars. All right, so your homework is to tell me if I'm right or wrong here. I'm not a big scientist, I don't know, but the Tzaddik says we have a chiyuv to look at the world and understand a little bit what's going on in the world, because from there you can learn Torah. So research a little bit. A neutron star is a star that, I don't know how it happens or why it happens, but the atom of the star collapses in and of itself. It condenses into itself. The density of the star is so enormous. You're nodding. Ah,
so nice. Singularity. Seven.
It's a what?
It creates a singularity.
Okay. So whatever that means.
It's an event horizon. No matter can go beyond it. It sucks everything in.
Yeah. That's a black hole. That's a big guy. We're talking about the little guy now. The little guy called the neutron star. Black holes are much bigger. Anyway, this thing basically condenses down so much that you can take something the size of the Earth and it condenses into a space of 10 square miles. Okay? One teaspoon of this thing, I don't know how they weighed it, but they claim that one teaspoon of this thing weighs 3 billion ton. It's like taking 50, I've come from Africa, I know what these things are. You take 50 million elephants and put it into a thimble. Yeah? 50 million elephants in a thimble, that's what one teaspoon of this matter weighs. And this thing is turning on its own axis 642 times a second. The Earth travels around its own axis 24 hours, once in 24 hours. This thing's spinning at 642 times a second. Yeah? And it's always doing that. It's always, it's not one day 642, one day 630. It's completely worked. Who's doing all this? My Rabbi Masech, this is all a Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is Hashem. And this is just one small story of one small part of 1% of what we know about. That's on the big scale. And by the way, black stars are much, much more intense and much more dense. Much more dense. What about on the other scale? What about on the small side? So I wanted to talk about lice, because lice we have some experience with, but there's things much smaller than lice. I mean, there's subatomic particles. You know, how many cells are there in one lice? I mean, some are billions. I don't know how many, whatever it's made up of. But one little lice, with its nervous system and its legs and its entire mechanism that works, is filled with untold genius. When you're fretting about your kid's lice or whatever, and you're getting upset or whatever, just understand how much genius there is in that lice. The lice excretes a cement that glues the eggs to your hair. That cement, when it's inside the lice, is liquid. The minute it comes out, it turns into a solid glue on the spot. Super glue. Super glue takes a few seconds to harden. This hardens instantaneously. So it's intelligent enough to keep it liquid while it's in its goof, but the minute it comes out, it gets hard. The only thing that separates the thing is very, very hot water. The Rambam says you have to wash the hair for us with very, very hot water once every 7 days. That's what removes the... That's not good for the chemical companies that sell you all this other stuff to remove your rasa. They don't show you this Rambam. That's what the Rambam says. Boiling hot water, as hot as you can stand, once every 7 days, that gets rid of the eggs. Okay? But the rasa has another problem. When he sticks his little needle into the head because he wants to suck out the blood, the human body has a coagulant that stops the blood flowing. So this little guy comes equipped with an anticoagulant. With complex chemical functionings going on there to allow the blood to continue to flow. That's a lice. The little brainless little creature that you even allowed to kill on Shabbos because he's so small that he doesn't count. The Mitzrayim couldn't repeat the lice because they were too small. They barely in the physical world. And the lice is massive compared to other things that are out there. You know how many mites there are in your bed? They discovered eyelash mites. There's millions of mites just in your eyelashes. Can you imagine how many there are in your bed? Yeah, and each one has got legs and each one has a little, it's a complete world. It's a complete world with a nervous system, with a microscopic, and it's all worked out. Akash Baruch Hu keeps control of that and he looks after this and he looks after the big stars, he looks after the galaxies hurtling around the world. And it's all there and it's all, and who's there to observe it and who's this all for? For me. It's for me. Who else walks outside and goes, wow? Who else has to say Shema? The cow just does what he does. He doesn't have to observe this. He's not the observer here. This is all for me. This is all for me. Some for you as well. That's your problem. But certainly for me. When you learn Torah, you see the same complexity. You see the same unbelievable enormity of genius and synchronicity. And it all works together. I'll come back to the Torah now, but just think about the harmony. It's not just that each lice is a genius, or each part of the Bria is genius. This whole thing works together. All these neutron stars and black holes, whatever, flying around, they have to take each other into account. They can't just go where they want and do what they want. Have you ever watched, you see them, yeah, they're magnificent. You get these big flocks of birds flying around and doing their little whatever. They've got a name for them. The kids call it something. In Hebrew, they call it something. They've got some name for these. You know what I'm talking about? No? You ever walked outside and you see in the sky, you see like 300 birds flying around and do these unbelievable maneuvers and movements or whatever? Yeah, I remember in the old showroom, there was that big window up the stairs. You used to go outside and see like three Bochrim standing like this, like watching them there in the mountains. Magnificent display of gymnastics and whatever. But the amazing thing is no two birds ever hit each other. You can imagine a whole bunch of birds, yeah, that are flying around and doing all these intricate maneuvers. Now and again, they'll be mistaken and one of them will hit each other. How does the first bird know? How does the last bird know what the first bird's about to do? Because as he does it, the other one does it exactly the same time. There was a biologist, Irish biologist, imagine such a thing, who lived in South Africa many years ago. He was one of the revolutionaries who came along and noticed all these amazing things in the scientific world. He wrote a book called Supernature. As a kid, I remember being very fascinated by some of the research he did. I was growing up in South Africa, and now we're talking about Lyle Watson, the biggest apicultist that ever lived. He wrote an entire book proving the existence of God, and his final conclusion at the end is, therefore, you see, there can't be a God. It was like so out of sync with reality, after he'd spent an entire lifetime's work proving the existence of God through all these amazing features and these amazing things. But he used to do these kind of studies. He measured the time that it would take from the last bird to the first bird. And how impossible that was in the natural world for that to happen. And therefore there must be some hidden sonar that's taking place here, which somehow evolved over billions of years, this kind of GPS system that these birds have and whatever. And amazing like discoveries like that. He did just an interesting study, which I always found fascinating. He spent 20 years studying the amount of people on trains in the London train system. And he came to the conclusion that after 20 years, there was 20% less people on trains that had accidents than trains that didn't have accidents. And he said, that can't happen by itself. If over a 20-year period, there's an average that there's 20% less people on trains that have accidents, there must be something stopping those people getting on the trains. If every day a million people travel on the London trains, on the day there's going to be an accident, 20% less get on the trains, what's doing that? And it's consistent like that over 20 years. There must be something going on here. And therefore, you see, there's no God. That's kind of like what he... That was his... That was an Irish look. An Irishman living in South Africa, you can't expect too much. But there was one of his statistics. I also remember, just as, not our subject, but just as an aside, he also studied how many postmen get bitten by dogs in London. And it was the same amount every year. Within one or two, it was the same amount every year. So he wanted to know, like, what stops this dog biting the postman? Like, if it's 750 postmen get bitten by dogs every year, so what stops the dog biting the 751st postman? Many statistics like that in the animal world. He came up with amazing patterns in nature and whatever, which prove that there's no God, obviously. But guy was able to sit down and analyze and study the world. He was the first guy that did electric studies on plants, that plants have feelings and all this kind of stuff and whatever. All this stuff from way back when. But we see the same intensity and the same complexity and the same synchronism in the same order we see it in Torah. Well, anybody's ever sat down and tried to learn one sugya, wherever it is, whether it's in Hilchos Kashrus, whether it's in Hilchos Nida, whether it's in Hilchos Shabbos, it's all working in harmony. It's all working together. Everything synchronizes. Everything is consistent. Reb Katz told me, I think it's brought in one of his books, that he used to go to a shiur on a Motzei Shabbos. The format of the shiur was, there were six people in the shiur, and they each used to ask the Rav a question. Not having worked it out before, one could be a Lacha question, one could be a question in philosophy, one could be a question in the Gemara they were learning. Each one would ask a question. The Rav would give one shiur that answered all six questions. On a consistent basis, that's what they did. So they once asked him how he did that. He said, well, it's very easy. The Torah is all connected. Everything in the Torah is connected to everything else. So all I do is I find the point where these six places meet, and there I give a shiur. Simple. Well, that's the problem. I mean, anyone can do it. You just have to know. You have to know that. You have to know Kol HaTorah, and you have to know how everything connects to everything else, because it has to be that way. It has to be that way, that everything's impacting on everything else. It can't be that Hilchos Shabbos is not affected by Hilchos Kabbonis. Are you allowed to bring a korban on Shabbos? You're not allowed to bring a korban. Everything's connected. Hilchos Kashrus, it's all interconnected. Akash Baruch Hu's one. The whole Gilo of the Bria is there to show us that it's all just Hashem. It's all one. So you find that happening in the Bria as well. You find that happening in the Bria as well. Just one small example is, it's a known fact that when a child gets sick, the body growth stops. The body needs the energy to fight the disease, so the growth stops. When the child gets well again, you'll notice when your kids get sick, if you notice them after they get better again, they change. I don't know if you've observed this. Maybe it's only my kids that it happens to. You'll see growth spurts. A child gets sick. After he gets better or whatever, there's a growth spurt. They start doing things they couldn't do before. They start noticing. Their bodies get bigger. The scientists say four times the speed of normal growth in that period after they get better. So now, the body decides it's going to slow down growth because it needs the energy to fight the disease, yeah? Now, you understand, every cell in the body has to cooperate. You can't have the kidney saying, hey, I'm not getting involved in this. I want to grow. So you guys want to slow down? You slow down. I'm growing. Yeah? The ear says, okay, I'm slowing down. And the right ear says, no, I'm not. So we're on this kid's got one big ear, one little. We see every cell in the body has to cooperate. You can talk about evolution as much as you want, but how do you get every cell in the body, billions and billions of cells, to agree? You can't get two Jews in a room to agree on anything. We get billions of cells to agree. The entire system slows down. I mean, if that doesn't open up to some feelings of some awesomeness, some closeness to come to Akash Bolchu. Imagine if you would do this 5 minutes before davening. A person 5 minutes before davening, just sit down and just think a little bit about who Hashem is. Think about what's going on. Rav Asim used to say, when you look at your hand, why don't you faint? How can you not faint when you look at your hand? You know, the genius of the Rubik's Cube, besides the mathematical genius of the Rubik's Cube, but the genius of the Rubik's Cube was the hinge that allowed you to turn something that much. It took years to develop a hinge which allowed the Rubik's Cube to exist, even after the mathematical formulas were put together by the guy that invented it. Have you looked at your hand? Chaim Soloveitchik says, if you look at the world, you'll see that every creature in the world has hands or feet or whatever, specifically designed for the task that it has. The panda bear's got a special thumb because he needs to break open the bamboo. The chimpanzee's got a different hand. The polar bear's got a different hand. He's got claws. He's got pants. Each animal has a different hand because they have different jobs. The human hand, everyone's got the same hand. And they do so many different tasks. One guy's a blacksmith. He's sitting there bashing with a hammer. Another guy's a brain surgeon. He's doing the most intricate work. Another guy's weaving. And everyone's using the same hand for multiple tasks. The same hand. How can you look at your hand and not faint? That's what he used to ask. I've never felt like blackouts when I look at my hand and start going woozy. Because we're a little bit insensitive. We don't know how to connect what we see. It takes work. It takes a lot of work So that's all I came to do here today, was just misoira a little bit this sugya. Chayim Salavon says it's a chiyuv, by the way. What I'm saying now is not just a nice thing to do. It's in the Chayim Salavobis. It's the second parrot, the second gate in the Chayim Salavobis. He talks about the chiyuv to be boichen, to look at the world, to meditate, to analyze, to look at the world we have around us. And today it's fantastic. Today there's worlds of genetics, there's worlds that are open to us that you can have a look at. You see Rav Avigdor Miller. Rav Avigdor Miller already 20, 30 years was talking about this stuff in his Pirush on Shara Bechina. Rav Avigdor Miller, his whole life was one big Shara Bechina. About the plants, you see that plants that need birds and insects to spread their seeds, or they are always colorful. The ones that use the wind are always dull. Oranges. The genius of an orange. Rav Avigdor Miller could speak about hours about the genius of an orange. Orange knows that you can't fly. It knows that you're not colorblind. Oranges drop their fruit from the tree when it's ripe. Before it's ripe, it's very hard to pluck an orange. Ever try to pluck a green orange off a tree? It's very, very hard. It holds on tight. The minute it's ready, it comes off very easily. In fact, it usually drops. It changes color to let you know that it's ready. When the orange is green, you can't see it. It's all there locked with up the leaves. The minute it becomes ready to eat, it makes sense of notice. It says, hey, I'm ready to eat. Bright orange. Inside it stays white, by the way, because inside you don't need to see it. If it was happening by chance, it should be orange the whole way through. It's only where you need the color on the outside. There are many, many things. And when you go into the orange, the way it's all wrapped and it's gift wrapped, each piece is there waiting and the juice is there. And it comes in winter when you need, Rupinkos used to say, it comes in winter when you need vitamin C. Vitamin C, sorry. This is all happening, and it's happening under our noses, and we're so busy and we're so running around, sometimes you have to take 5 minutes out just to look and analyze the world. And when you start seeing a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the world, and you start seeing these things, you start seeing it in many places and it starts happening naturally, and the whole world looks different. You're living in what's called with Yiras Hashem. Yiras HaRamayimimus, you start being aware and being awestruck just by the enormous genius of the world out there. And then you can start looking at yourself. As he says, the Chovas HaLevavos says, the place where it's easiest to see this is in the creature of called human. In the creature called a human being, how much genius and wisdom just in your own mind, in your seichel, in your ability to think, in your ability to analyze, all just, and that's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how small we are, how minute we are in relation to this enormity of this genius out there. And then he says, then you'll come to a Koros HaToyev and you'll be able to praise Hashem properly, you'll be able to live with Hashem the way we're supposed to live with Hashem. So that was just, came here just a little bit just to misoira this sugya that is often very neglected. And usually because we're running around too much, but we're coming into what's called Bein Hazmanim now. People go away and people travel. You have time to think a little bit and analyze a bit. It's an opportunity just to take the sugya and ma'ir it. If anybody wants to see how you see this in food, in eating, Rav Pinkus has an amazing, amazing shiur in English called Kedushas Achila. There used to be copies flying around the yeshiva. I don't know if we can get hold of it, but unbelievable shiur. Well, you'll eat very differently. You look at the world. He shows you just incredible beauty just in the genius of what the body does with the food that you eat. Unbelievable. You swallow the food and that's it. And the body knows exactly what to do. The bones take the calcium and this takes that. And if the bones would stop taking the calcium and the kidneys would take the calcium, the whole system would break. Everybody knows what to take, when and how, and the exact amounts and what to get rid of. And the waste matter is amazing. He has a whole shiur just on this sugya. It's unbelievable. So that's what I came to do here. Mr. Hashem will be l'tuelis for everybody. Shalom Meir said, making a siyum in Masechtas Kedushin. It's no surprise. The only surprise that he's not making it for the third time this month, because if anybody knows Rav Shalom, and anybody who hangs around here in the afternoon, there are not too many people that hang around here in the afternoon that see what's going on here. And not only that, those who know, and I know, and it's a secret, I'm not going to tell you where, but there's a certain little place where there are two Yidden who don't know that there's a thing called Bein Hazmanim. Most people know you take a break, there's a Bein Hazmanim, there's an Erev Shabbos, there's a Motzei Shabbos, there's a little Beis Midrash somewhere in Beit Shemesh where you can go Bein Hazmanim whenever you want, and you'll find two Yidden. One ex-Talmid of Oravram, one Talmid of Oravram, and you'll find them sitting and learning Yoyim of Elayla. He doesn't even know that I see him, because I can walk in and make a noise, no one notices. And with hasmoda and dedication and normalkeit and an incredible, incredible diligence and dedication to... I remember last year I was speaking to him about Bein Hazmanim, the war. Yes, Bein Hazmanim, whatever. He says, our enemies are going on holiday, how do I... What are you talking about? You just had a winter's month. You know, winter's month, most guys are finished at the end of the winter's month. Tell Yeshiva Boch, he has to stay one more day in Yeshiva. That was, you remember last year? It was like a torture. It is another day. Anyway, I'm going on holiday. Why should I? Posh it. That's a Ben-Torah. That's somebody who lives his life. What does the Torah say? Not what do I feel, what I do. My name in a Torah, and therefore it's no surprise that together with Rup Sipper, and there's some others here. I don't know, my Abram phone me is here. There's a chaburiya that learns from 3 to 4 every day. It's probably what they call the graveyard hour, the most difficult time of the day. to have a shiur, to give a shiur in Eretz Yisrael is from 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and consistently for almost 15 years now, I've been sitting and learning and growing and finishing Masechta after Masechta after Masechta. Gemara Rashi with tests, with Bechinas, with Chazoras, an amazing, amazing experience for those that have bought into it. And this Yom Etz Hashem, Boch Hashem, we have Rav Shaul Meyer that managed to finish Masechta Kiddushin, Moedik Kinyan, and Leila Nishmas, the Siyum. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Rav Shaul Meyer to make a Siyum.